Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Dr. Mitchell Earl Gibson, author of a new book, 9 Insights for a Happy and Successful Life. The greatest achievements in human history have been attained by those individuals who strive to elevate themselves way above that everyday ebb and flow of life. Happiness is the key and the center of human consciousness. And we're about to embark on this fantastic journey of insight into this human consciousness. But first, a little bit about Dr. Gibson. Dr. Mitchell Gibson is a leading authority on the interface of science, the human soul, and the frontiers of human consciousness. He is the best-selling author of Your Immortal Body of Light, Signs of Mental Illness, Signs of Psychic and Spiritual Ability, The Living Soul, and the Ancient Teaching Stories. He has delivered addresses to many of the world's largest conferences related to science and consciousness. These include the International Science and Consciousness Conference, the Sivananda Ashram Annual Symposium, International Institute of Integral Human Sciences, the SSGR IT Conference on Advances of Electronic Medicine in Italy, the Southeast Regional Unity Ministers Conference, the Northwest Astrological Association, the American Federation of Astrologers, and many, many others. Dr. Gibson has been a consultant for Fortune 500 companies, Hollywood celebrities, professional athletes, A&E Network, NBC, ABC, and the CBS regional affiliate television stations, newspapers, and radio stations. Hi, Dr. Gibson.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, and I'm so excited to be talking to you. You don't know, I'm just like watching the clock to finally call you for this, because after just checking up on you on your website, I just find that you're a very interesting person. And to get our listeners sort of into this, and I want to first of all have you explain, what does human consciousness mean?
What is human consciousness?
What is human consciousness? I mean, we talk about it, we want it, we are there, we elevate it, we or don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's start right there. Human consciousness, what does it mean?
That is an excellent question. When I was in residency, we had a process called orals, which is a test that you take every year to see if you have learned enough in each year to be able to move from one year to another. And once you do that, you get to pass. Well, one of the questions one of my professors asked me is, he said, what is human thought? Which is almost exactly like what you asked me.
Uh-huh.
And so I've actually had a chance to look into that question and research it. Consciousness and thought are the basic building blocks of what we call reality. Because there's nothing that happens around you that is not first present in your consciousness. For instance, if you look at a clock, or if you look at a car, if you look at your hand, you're not actually seeing that clock or your hand. What you're seeing is the representation that your mind creates of that object. As light hits your retina, that light is turned into an electrical signal which travels into your consciousness, into your mind, and is then transformed into a symbol that you can understand as a clock or as a person or as a place or a thing. Well, consciousness is the basic energy building block by which we understand and perceive reality around us. And as such, consciousness can be manipulated, it can be expanded, it can be contracted, and it can be changed in such a way that we might not see the same thing looking at the same object. If 10 people look at the same object, because their consciousness has a different tuning focus, they might not see the same thing. So consciousness is a basic energy form. It is an energy that can be manipulated, it can be expanded, it can be contracted, and it can also be shifted toward one type of perception or another, if that helps.
It does help. So what I'm hearing you say is you and I may be looking at that same clock, and you and I may be seeing it totally in a different reality.
I took a course in, yeah, that's right. I took a course in advanced hypnosis after I'd been out of residency for maybe 3 or 4 years. And in the course, I had basic hypnosis in my early training, but in advanced hypnosis, you learn how to manipulate consciousness. And in that, one of the tests you have to pass to get the diploma, the degree, is you have to be able to take a willing subject and change their perception of temperature and of time so that if a person's in a hot room or in a room, you hypnotize them and you make them perceive that the room changes temperature. And if you do it correctly, you can see their skin color change. For instance, if the room is 75 degrees and you tell the person the room is ice cold, under the right hypnotic trance level, they will turn blue and they'll start shivering. And they'll get the same pupil response, they'll get the goose flesh, just like they're in a cold room. Or if they're in a room that's 75 degrees, you can tell them that the room is 110 degrees, and they'll start sweating, the clothes will become drenched, same thing. So consciousness can be manipulated, it can be shifted, if you understand the principles or the basic building blocks by which it can be moved.
So, Dr. Gibson, you're talking about, okay, doing this through hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people that do a lot of manipulating that is not under hypnosis. And so is it possible that somebody that you're talking to or you know, with someone that can actually manipulate that consciousness without you even knowing?
Well, the concept of hypnosis of necessity looks at the concept of trance. And during the course of an average day, all of us go in and out of trance all the time. When you're driving in your car and you're driving for 20 minutes and you don't realize that 10 minutes has passed, you're in a trance. Or if you're reading a book or if you're looking at television or if you're just listening to a long, boring conversation, you can fall into a trance and start daydreaming without realizing it. Advertisers, corporate entities take advantage of the fact that we go in and out of trance all the time, and they place suggestions in our trance state to manipulate our consciousness and to manipulate our behaviors. So the state of trance is actually one of the most common human states of consciousness that we have. It's something that we're in and out of all the time.
Just listening to you could be a really scary thought. So as our listening audience is sitting here and saying, okay, I'm wondering what you can tell us, Dr. Gibson, about how we can protect ourselves from the manipulation.
Well, one of the reasons I began studying meditation and consciousness is that I found that there's a tremendous amount of information that has been learned about consciousness that isn't published. More than 90% of what we know about consciousness and human intelligence and human enlightenment is classified material. And when you start looking into it, you find that some of the biggest entities that are looking into it are the governments and military. And it really made me curious as to, well, if they're doing so much looking into it, why do they always want to debunk what people find? Well, after I did some researching, I found that one of the greatest ways to maintain control is to maintain a state of what we call deniability. Well, if you say that something's not possible, but you're looking at it from the research standpoint, if you say it's not possible and you find a cure for something, or if you find a way to do it, the way to protect it is to say, well, you didn't find that. It's not possible. Then you can use it without the public even questioning it. So the concept of plausible deniability is something that when you begin to look at what's out there, what can help a person protect themselves, once you get past the skeptics and the paid scientists that are paid to say don't even look into it, you find that there's a whole lot of things you can do to protect yourself. For instance, being able to control what brain level or what level of consciousness your brain is in at any one time is a tremendous tool. Learning how to generate alpha waves in your brain, which are the waves that you generate right before you fall off to sleep, or wearing a spiritual talisman that protects you from negative energy can protect your consciousness just enough that it can't be manipulated as easily, or practicing a specific type of mantra pattern. There are certain mantras that just by saying them on a regular basis protects your consciousness from outside intrusion. I do a seminar called Removing Negative Energies where I talk 2 days just about this very subject.
And Dr. Gibson, you had just mentioned spiritual talisman. Let's just talk about that because, you know, we can talk some of those other things probably for our listeners. They can see the concept, but now all of a sudden we're shifting into something and talking about a spiritual talisman, wearing an object, a symbol. Explain that.
Well, let's start with the most basic symbols around us. Symbols are very powerful tools for communication. For instance, if you see a red octagon, even if it doesn't have the word stop on it, in many countries that symbol sets off a chain reaction of energies in your consciousness that says pay attention, alert. Or if you see a large cross shape, especially if the cross is asymmetrical, which meaning that there's more length of the cross than there is breadth. It means that there is a connection with Christianity or religion. Or if we see a Star of David, which is a six-pointed cross associated with Judaism, it sets off certain energy patterns in our minds. Well, symbols are very powerful tools for manipulating energy. And if a person understands that symbols can manipulate energy, you can then understand that the combination of certain energy symbols can be used not only to manipulate energy, but also can be used to protect energy. And in almost every culture in our world, for thousands of years, there have been tools that have been discovered that have been used to protect from negative energy, enhance positive energy, tools for healing. One of the first things that was discovered in one of the oldest graves that we discovered in North America was the grave of a shaman. Mm-hmm. And in this shaman's grave, they found a lot of amulets and talismans that this man had taken with him, and he had deemed them important enough to take with him into the next life. Even in King Tut's tomb in ancient Egypt, there were found a number of talismans and amulets that were supposed to protect and empower the king in the next life. But when you look in the graves of many of the important leaders and important spiritual figures that have been found over the centuries, almost to a person, there are spiritual totems and talismans that are discovered in the grave with them. So mankind, for many thousands of years, has imported a great deal of power and stature to symbols and talismans of power. Well, when you look into the science of talismans and symbols of power, we find that there are symbols out there that sell for millions of dollars. There are symbols out there, talismans that are worth hundreds of thousands that people wear, and they don't let you know that they're wearing them. And it's a huge industry in many parts of the world. In Thailand alone, a few years ago, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about the industry of spiritual talismans. It is a $20 billion a year industry in Thailand.
Wow.
Huge industry. And it's where I get some of my best ones.
Wow. I had no idea. So we're talking about human consciousness. What do you feel is happening in our society right now as far as the consciousness is? Where are we? What's happening?
It's an interesting question. Very good question. I like your questions. They're very well thought out. It's very good. If we look at human consciousness right now, we're at a very unique, very pivotal point in human consciousness and consciousness development. In the last 100 years, there has been more information that has been discovered than at any other point in recorded history. In other words, we know more about the universe now than the human race has ever known. And that information is doubling every 10 years. So we are the smartest, intellectually the smartest race that has ever walked this planet in recorded history. But what is also true is we are the race that has discovered more ways to kill and destroy than any other race has discovered. So it creates an interesting paradigm. We have this huge intellectual development. We have this huge mental capacity. At the same time, we develop this huge capacity for destruction and for war and for basically destroying the very world that created us. And so it creates sort of a dichotomy of consciousness that is interesting to look at from a philosophical and a scientific standpoint. We have a race of people that is advancing light years ahead of its time intellectually and mentally. But at the same time, morally and emotionally, we're kind of at a standstill. The average level of emotional and moral development of the human race hasn't really changed much in the last couple hundred years. Intellectually we have, and technologically we've advanced tremendously. But if you look at who we are inside emotionally, we're not that much different than we were during, say, the 1700s or the 1800s. We're kind of the same. We're not really growing in that way. And so in some ways, to me, that's a scary proposition. We have this huge opportunity for the development of consciousness, but at the same time, we're not doing the things that are necessary to evolve our race in such a way that will make us a more advanced race. And one of the things that I would say that supports that is that human slavery, which is something most people associate with ancient times, is actually more common now. There are more human slaves in the world now, according to the World Health Organization, than at any other time in history. And you would think, oh, that's just something that happened, you know, in North America or in Africa or Egypt or something like that. But it's actually going on right now. It's a huge problem in our world. Also, gambling and the human sex trade is more common now than any other time in history. So when you pair that with our intellectual and technical achievement, you can see that, well, yes, we've grown on the one hand, but we still have a lot of room for growth on the other.
Dr. Gibson, you had mentioned that our society right now is the most intelligent that it's ever been. However, I know that there are some believers that feel that that is not so, that the society that lived on Atlantis was actually more intelligent than what we are at this point. Any comments on that?
Well, when you look at recorded history, mainstream historians and archaeologists don't accept the theory of Atlantis. Atlantis has been, and Lemuria and Mu and a number of other continents have been the subject of a lot of research that I've looked into. And there is some history to suggest, if you look at those continents, that they were more advanced. But we just don't have enough data to support those theories. I mean, obviously, if the theories are true, they were light years ahead of us. But the same thing would be true of their, if, let's say they were more advanced, the same thing would be then true of their emotional and their moral development. They destroyed themselves the same way that we're likely to destroy ourselves. They did the same thing with the, with more advancement. They didn't advance themselves internally and morally.
It's possible that some of the souls that lived on Atlantis are just repeating everything right now.
And that would be a very interesting way to look at it. They made the
Yeah.
And if they are the same souls, they're making the same mistakes.
That's right. And, you know, how many times do we have to do it before we actually get it?
I saw an interesting video on YouTube that featured some of the souls who had reincarnated, and it was suggesting that some of the souls who had reincarnated were actually souls that ruled not only in Atlantis but in ancient Egypt. And one of them was our President Barack Obama.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at the statue of the king or the pharaoh Amenhotep, it looks almost exactly like Barack Obama. I mean, and in the video it places them side by side, it makes them look like they're the same person. And it goes on to look at the wife, or the, I'm sorry, the mother of Amenhotep, and then Barack Obama's wife, Michelle Obama. And they look exactly alike. It looks like the same person. And it goes on to look at his daughter, and it looks at Nefertiti, and they look almost alike. So it's a really fascinating comparison of potential past lives and a connection with personalities and connecting with some of the information you were talking about with Atlantis. It is entirely possible that we do reincarnate and we do come back, and that we do, in many cases, carry some of the same information and potentials.
And repeat the same things over and over again, both positive and negative.
Until we learn.
And then, okay, let's go into that direction. When we finally get it and we learn, then what? What is your thought on that?
Well, let's step back just for a moment.
Okay.
I have a number of people who are students in a school that I have called the Living Soul Spiritual Development Course. And one of the things that the students are looking for is, a lot of people are very successful in life. They make good money. They have successful families and jobs. A number of them are leaders of companies, doctors, professional people, lawyers, business people. And they ask the same question, what's next? What can I do to advance my consciousness, to advance my soul? And I believe that the process of being human is more than just having a good job, having a good family, being happy with life. I believe that we come here for a purpose, and I believe that part of that purpose is the evolution of the physical body so that there is a next level of achievement of energy for the physical body, and I also believe that it's evolution of consciousness. I believe that at some point our consciousness is going to be capable of things that are reminiscent of what Arthur C. Clarke said about magic and science. He said that a civilization sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic, and that at some point our consciousness and our civilization will develop to the point where we'll be doing things that we now look at as science fiction. I believe that our consciousness, that we're only using a small part of it, has tremendous potential, and that's some of the things we explore in the course. We explore what can consciousness do, what it can achieve, and what are goals that we can reasonably set for ourselves based on those questions.
Wow. It sounds like this workshop or the course is really geared for those of us that are seekers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that a person, once we're in this world long enough And once we receive or achieve a certain degree of mastery, we start looking around and saying exactly what you said. What's next? What can I do? What's the purpose? Do I just live, get old, and die? There's got to be more to it than that.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. 2012. Okay, so the world is going to end in some, you know, some people think that this is it. I forget. There are so many different dates. December 21st. I heard something in September, October. There are different dates that all of a sudden floating around that we're going to, the world is going to end. Others feel that there's going to be a shift in human consciousness. Others are saying, huh? What are you talking about? So what are we talking about, Dr. Gibson?
Well, the elders that talked about 2012, the Aztec, the Maya, the Hopi, the Cherokee, many of the ancient African cultures, even ancient Egypt had some information that they recorded in many of the pyramids about 2012. They didn't say that the world was going to end. They said that we were going to enter a new cycle of consciousness where the human race would be elevated beyond where we are now. So they didn't see the world being destroyed in a ball of fire or something, but what they really saw, and if you really examine the teachings, is that they saw us entering to an age called the Age of the New Sun, which meant that the sun itself is going to start putting out energies that will transform our consciousness in such a way that we will see the world and see ourselves as part of a galactic and universal community rather than this isolationist, reductionist philosophy that we've had for 2,000 years, that we're alone in the universe and that at some point we may find life, but it's not out there. I think something is going to happen that will transform that paradigm forever. And one of the things I think that points to that is something that I read in the India Times paper in 1997 that looked at some remote viewings by a group of very old Tibetan elders. And these elders, all they do is they look into the future. And they commented specifically about what they saw happening in the year 2012. And what they saw us meeting civilizations from other dimensions, not just planets, but other dimensions of reality, and beginning the process of interacting with them. And these elders are very adamant about the fact that this meeting, this contact, would change human consciousness forever. And I believe that at some point there will be a radical shift in consciousness for humanity that's based on contact outside our dimension, outside our reality.
Okay, you've got to explain this to our listeners. Outside of reality, meeting others in other dimensions.
In order for our reality to work, scientists now assume that there are at least 10 to 12 dimensions of what we call reality. So we can look at reality in the proverbial sense in our conventional consciousness and science as having three dimensions. It has a length, it has a width, it has a depth. You can also add a fourth dimension of time. If you sit a ball on a table and you can look at it for a period of 5 minutes, you've moved into the fourth dimension, which is the dimension of time. Well, quantum physicists and theoretical physicists, when they examine reality, they find that reality has more than just four dimensions. And they also find that energy and matter are the same. That's what Albert Einstein was very famous for, E equals MC squared. Well, if energy and matter are the same, if the dimensions of reality extend beyond the four dimensions, what if there are beings that are made of a different type of matter, energy, than we're accustomed to, that live in these dimensions that we have yet to discover, in the same way that not too long ago, we didn't know what bacteria and viruses were. Not too long ago, there were things in the ocean that we assumed didn't exist just because we hadn't gone to that depth. It may be that as we advance in our understanding of reality, our understanding of technology, we may find that there are beings not unlike ourselves that live in these other existences, dimensions of reality, that we only have yet to discover. We just have to look for them. And once we do that, I think it will change how we see ourselves and how we see reality. In the same way that the understanding of bacteria and viruses changed medicine and changed our understanding of healing.
So is it possible, Dr. Gibson, here I am sitting at my desk talking to you, and this is my reality. So if we shift to another reality, is it possible that there's somebody else in the same space in their reality?
It is entirely possible that there's more than one of you, and it is entirely possible that there's more than one of me. And one of the special relativity theorems that Albert Einstein proposed, he proposed that for every atom, there's an equal and opposite anti-atom that is exactly like that other atom, except that it has an opposite charge. So Paul Dirac was a physicist that lived in the 1930s that proposed the antiproton. Well, we have now created and discovered antimatter. Scientists believe that there are entire dimensions and galaxies made of nothing but this stuff. And so there's probably anti-people, people who look exactly like me and you running around in the universe, but are just made of a different type of energy, a different type of matter. So, yes, it could be that there's another you, there's another me that exists that we just can't see in space and time just yet that fit perfectly with our new understanding of what reality is.
Mind-boggling, I'm sure. It's very mind-boggling.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Dr. Mitchell Gibson. He is the author of 9 Insights for a Happy and Successful Life. Wow, what do you think so far? Pretty darn awesome, isn't it? Well, stay tuned because there is just so much more that we're going to be talking about. Okay, big crisis going on in our country and world right now, finances, money. And somebody said, there's an adage that says the root of all evil, money. So what is going on? Why are our fathers not able to create something that is actually workable? What's happening? Why are all these people losing their homes? What's happening with our consciousness?
Well, when you look at money, money is, some people say it's the root of all evil, but it's not necessarily the money itself that's the root of all evil. It's the energy that we associate with the money that is in many ways part of the challenge that we're facing. Let's just examine the energy of money just for a second. If you look at the ways that humanity has made a large share of the wealth that we've created, a lot of it has to do with negative energy. When you look at the things that are the most profitable for us, one of the most profitable things that we do is war. That's why there's always a war going on somewhere. War is a very profitable item. Another thing that we do that's very profitable is gambling. Gamblers in Vegas don't count their money with the machine. They weigh it. They know that 50 kilos of 20s is $1 million. They know that. They also, when you look at one of the other most profitable ways that we make money, it's drugs. So if you look at how long we've been making money in this way, we understand that money has a very strong negative energy of resonance associated with it that at some point we have to deal with. And that's one of the things that we see in our world now. The breadth and the scope of the negative energies associated with money has extended to such a point that we're now being faced with, we can't look the other way with it. We can't just say we'll deal with it down the road. Well, we are now literally down the road. In my book, The 9 Insights, the first chapter looks at this very challenge. How can we look at the energy of money and begin to change the energy so that it's something useful? Well, one of the problems with this energy is that most of the money in the world is limited and confined to a very small number of hands. Less than 5% of the people in the world control 97% of the money. If we distributed money equally, there would be no problem with hunger, poverty, disease at all. But the difficulty is we don't distribute money that way. We cloister money in a very small number of hands, so that overall that energy doesn't get to be distributed, it doesn't get to be disseminated, and over time it becomes at one level, at the level that is being used, something that we have to deal with. And that's what the founding fathers, the people that are in control of the governments now, are facing. They're facing the fact that there's so much of this energy, they can't just manipulate it away, they can't do fancy accounting tricks and deal with it. What they've missed is the fact that the spiritual nature of this money has created the problems that we're dealing with now. And that's why we've seen these radical shakedowns in the last 10, 15 years with money. We've seen these huge amounts of money being created and dissolved. But, and actually, most people never see the money. What we are dealing with is the energy. The energy has to be respected for what it is, and at some point we're going to have to deal with it from the energetic perspective. But I think it's going to require evolution and consciousness of the people that are in control, which I think in many ways are beginning to struggle with and to see in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So can we bring spirituality into what's happening right now?
Well, that's one of the missions that we have in the center that I created in High Point, North Carolina. A lot of the people that I work with are leaders in business and in industry. And one of the things that is important for a business person to understand is that every dime that you make, every product that you create, every year that you create millions or billions of dollars, you're also creating energy that affects the world. And many companies are now beginning to see that. And we are, because you're a captain of that company or captain of industry, you are responsible for the energy that you put out into the world. And so it's more than just making money or making a good widget or making your bonuses. You also have to create an environment whereby the world evolves because of your presence.
Mm-hmm.
And many companies are beginning to start to understand and begin to, in some small ways, embrace that. I think the green movement is one small way that we're beginning to embrace that. But I think in many ways one of the things that has to happen is our leaders in business and industry and the military have to become more enlightened to the process of energy, consciousness, and money. And when they do that, I think we'll start to see many changes. And one of the things that I think is important in that change is we have to begin to incorporate the energy of the feminine into the energy of industry and finance and military. That, I think, is absolutely crucial, because the imbalance of the energy now is entirely too male, and that's part of the imbalance in the consciousness.
I so agree with you. So, Dr. Gibson, medical doctor, psychiatrist, retired, doing now something that's obviously a passion, I can hear it in your voice, and really is not part of mainstream medicine, not part of mainstream psychiatry, as I'm sure that what you were taught when you went to school, medical school.
Yes.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Why the shift? I mean, this is, you know, you learned a lot. I understand. I hear, you know, a lot of the science explanations coming out of it, and obviously that's part of that part of you. But why the shift to this?
Excellent question. About 12 years ago, I met a rabbi in Los Angeles, Michael Berg, who is a Kabbalist, and he's really good at what he does. I met him through a seminar that he gave in Los Angeles, and I actually went to the Kabbalah Center. And to make a long story short, I was introduced to a prayer called the Atabakor, which is several thousand years old. And the prayer encodes the energy of the name of the creator of the universe. It's called the Atabakor. And the rabbi said, why don't you just try that with some of your clients? And I said, okay, I'll do that. And as luck would have it, about a month after, a client came in who I was treating her son, but she said her father was dying of renal cell carcinoma. And she said that she wanted me to pray for him. And I said, okay, which is kind of an unusual request, but I was a spiritual person, and I just said, okay, I'll do that. So she brought him in, and I prayed for him. He was dying of renal cell carcinoma that infected the left inferior pole of his kidney. And he was scheduled for a staging laparotomy for chemotherapy. They wanted to know what kind of chemotherapy would work, if surgery would be a benefit. But after I prayed for him, a week later, his daughter called and said when they went in for the staging laparotomy, they couldn't find the cancer. And They searched, and the cancer had disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
6 months later, the cancer was still gone. And my rational, academically trained mind had difficulty with that. I thought, okay, I just prayed over this, man, and maybe it was just a coincidence. Maybe this mm-hmm. thing happened. And spontaneous remissions are recorded in the literature, but you don't really see a stage four spontaneous remission that often. That's just really rare. And my secretary, Sharon, who was very close to me at the time, requested some time off because her sister developed disseminated liver cancer, which is kind of a bad cancer to have. And so she wanted some time off to take care of her sister's affairs. So I blessed with that same prayer, a cross that I said, give to your sister. Well, a week after she put the cross on her sister, the tumor disappeared. She was taking off chemotherapy. The doctors watched her, and 10 years later, she's still alive, doing great. Well, people just don't recover from that kind of cancer that way, and this had happened twice. So in looking at that, I began to do an extensive search on prayer and meditation and mantras, and I found that this phenomenon is not an unusual phenomenon, that prayer and mantras has been found to be an effective treatment for a number of things. And since that time, I've had over 300 cases very similar to the ones I just told you about. It made me look at what I was doing differently. I found that there's a certain power that we have locked inside of us that is related to prayer, that is related to mantras, that is related to consciousness, that we just have to try to use it for its worth. Now, it doesn't work in every case for everybody, but it's worked often enough that it made me shift from just a traditional medical practice and retire from medicine to more extensively examining what this energy is and how it can be used.
When did you accept the fact that actually you are a clairvoyant?
In 1994, I visited a lady who was the wife of the ambassador to England from India. Her name was Indira Devi. She passed a number of years ago. And this was a lady who was one of the greatest clairvoyants in the world at that time. And she was also one of the greatest, certainly one of the greatest healers in India. And I had a dream where I saw her appear to me in the dream. She was in a rose garden. And she said, why don't you come see me? I have a gift to give you. And I had never met this woman before, so I looked her up. I called a friend of mine who had heard of her, and he said, yes. Her name was, she called herself Ma. Ma does this all the time. So I went to see her, and she placed an energy inside of me that opened up the capacity of my third eye to see energy around people and within myself. And from that time period of meeting her and seeing her and sharing energy with her, it radically changed my understanding of energy and the third eye and of consciousness.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story.
True story.
I believe it. I thoroughly believe it. Dr. Gibson, let's talk about your book, 9 Insights for a Happy and Successful Life. Tell our listening audience what this book is about. We've just gone all over the board here with all kinds of discussions, but let's get back to your book.
The book was written with one concept in mind. When I see a lot of clients as a spiritual counselor now, not as a psychiatrist. I haven't written a prescription in almost a decade. But it's important for me to understand with my clients how they can become happier with their lives, because one of the most important diseases that a psychiatrist treats is depression. And when you see enough depression, when you see enough people try to commit suicide, happiness is one of the things that when you understand the levels of depression, happiness becomes your ally. If you can get a person to embrace the concept of happiness, you can get them to take their medicine more, to be more attentive in their therapy, to change the energy around themselves. And so over the years, I noticed that a number of clients that I was working with gave me some really profound insights on just what this ephemeral, this thing called happiness really is. And I took notes, and I made hundreds of pages of these notes, and I distilled them down to 9 insights that helped me understand what happiness is, what this enigma of happiness is, and how a person can help discover and make it grow in their own lives. And that's what the book is about. The book is a condensation of stories and information from my clients, my own personal life, and from the life of many historical figures about the concept of happiness and how we can look at our lives and build happiness into our lives using the available tools that we have right around us.
And we do have those tools, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We sure do. We just have to tap into them. And it's that tapping in that many of us have a block. And, we get ourselves into trauma and chaos, and this goes on, and pretty soon we dig ourselves deeper and deeper, and we don't even know the concept of happiness anymore. Like, what is happiness? But what I'm hearing you saying is you can get yourself out of that hole.
One of the important keys to getting yourself out of that hole is in one of the chapters in the book. It's a concept that embraces the understanding that life is an exercise in the creation of a menu of possibilities. Many of us, when we're young, we have a lot of ideas about what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. But if we lose someone, if we meet a few failures, if life hits us in a way that we consider negative, we let go of the menu of possibilities that we create, and we focus just on surviving from day to day. And we let go of the idea that we can even be happy. Well, one of the most important challenges that faces us as humans is not letting go of that menu of possibilities, continuing to build it, continuing to maintain it, adding to it as we go through our daily lives helps us maintain that vision of what we consider happiness. And also remembering that happiness feeds on failure. Instead of seeing failures as a way of stopping us from considering the possibilities of growth, understand that History is full of examples of people that if they had not failed to a certain level, we would never have heard of them. They would never have been famous and successful. And one of the most famous and successful people that outlines that point is J.K. Rowling. Her book was actually thrown into the trash can.
Yep.
When it was first written. And it was only by the broadest stroke of luck that one of the assistants at a publisher's house saw it in the trash can, picked it up, took it home, read it, and placed it in front of a publisher and insisted that he read it. And that publisher did publish it, but even when that publisher published it, he only published a limited run, I think it was like 500 to 1,000 copies. And it was only after that run became successful that she did become J.K. Rowling and the book was able to be successful. But she faced a mountain of failures on the way to making that book one of the biggest juggernauts in publishing history. And that's just one of the examples that we go into in a lot of detail in the book.
And she is an example that certainly, we need to, when we're in our dumps, to really place her in our vision and just see exactly what she did, because she was in the bottom of the barrel, personally, emotionally.
Suicide was in her mind.
Exactly.
She was depressed. She had a broken marriage. I mean, she was on welfare.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people can resonate with that story because
exactly.
It resonates with a lot of people's energies.
Exactly. Dr. Gibson, spiritual being living a human experience. Is that really us?
I believe so. I believe that as humans, we have the capacity to be something more than what reality, what TV, what movies tell us that we are. One of my greatest friends, a man by the name of Siva Babu, Dr. Palau, wrote an article that I read on his website. He said that we've not done a good job at creating a great reality. We've done a good job at creating a mediocre reality. And when I read that a few years ago, it really hit me in that if we are spiritual beings having a human experience, where's the greatness in our reality?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many ways we've given up on the concept of greatness in order to make ends meet, to get our kids through college, to punch that time clock, to meet the bottom line. We're forgetting the idea of what we're really here for, is to make this reality better, to make this reality greater. And as spiritual beings, I think that's one thing that would help us be happier and more successful in life, is embracing the concept that we do have the challenge and the right to make our reality better than what it is.
Well said. Dr. Gibson, this has been just such a pleasure for me talking to you, and I'm saying, geez, look what time it is. We could go on and on for a long time, and I'm sure that our listeners are also saying, that's it, it's over, he's got so much information. Yes, he does, and he has a lot of information on his website. So, Dr. Gibson, tell our listening audience your website address.
My website address is www.tybro.com. And you can reach me through my email address at mgibsonmd@aol.com. That's my business email address. And drop me a line. I'll get back to you.
Yes, he will. And also check out that website because there are books and other things that he talks about like ancestral cleansings and spiritual cleansings, and but I wanted to talk about it. We just ran out of time, so we'll have to leave that for another interview. Thank you so much, Dr. Gibson. It's just been such a pleasure for me.
Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful interview for me. Thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Listeners, Dr. Mitchell Earl Gibson's book is 9 Insights for a Happy and Successful Life. It's available on Amazon. It's available on his website. And as you've heard so far, wow, talk about a lot of information coming from Dr. Gibson. He is one of the well-versed person, and I really encourage you to look at this book, look at his other books on his website, and check out his website, and give him a call. Email him. I'm sure that there are some possibilities for you to change your reality, to change your human consciousness. I know it certainly has evoked some things to think about for me, and once I'm finished with this interview, I'm going to take some time and meditate and just see what is it that I need to do next. Again, thanks a lot, Dr. Gibson.
Thank you so much.
This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.